Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am one of your hosts for today, Ursula Rudenberg, together with my co-host, Kay Puttock. Hello, Kay.
Hello, Ursula, and hello to you, the listener. It's the 1st of June, and summer is getting off to a very nice and temperate start. It should be sunny today and tomorrow, with highs between 65 and 75 degrees, and cool nights in the 50s. A 30% chance of rain is predicted for Wednesday, but it should stay up in the high 70s. Chances of rain are predicted to increase on Friday and then drop down again to around 30% on Saturday and Sunday. All in all, it sounds like pretty good news so far for people's gardens.
Thank you, Kay. And as we all know, weather can get volatile in the summer. So today we have Keith Morgan from Storey County Emergency Management coming in for an update. Keith is the Emergency Management Coordinator for Storey County, and he's going to start talking with us every first Monday of the month, bringing updates from the Emergency Management Services. And we really appreciate Keith doing that.
And we have some other guests for you, too. The KHOI Doodle Squad is here. Can't wait to tell you about that. Also, we have a group forming in town, a new group. The Ames Progressive Alliance had their first public meeting of about 300 people yesterday. It was a picnic in Brookside Park with music and lots of food. We'll get an explanation of what that was all about.
But let's start off this hour with Local Talk with a report from the natural world, as we like to do. It appears that Dennis Jones, our wonderful landlord, and he is a wonderful landlord, has a new tenant. Everyone at KHOI has noticed recently that a couple of sparrows have been flying in and out of our entrance area in a very focused way. It turns out that they have built a nest on top of the small speakers above our front door where we play the radio for people walking by, so their chicks are going to grow up listening to KHOI. Not sure what that'll do to them. In fact, we all realize that we don't really know that much about sparrows mainly because they're so common and that we've taken them for granted. So Virad Diwati did some research for us and filed the following report. Virad is our newest intern from the Greenlee School of Journalism at Iowa State, and we will be hearing a lot more from him here on Local Talk, and we're pleased to have him on the team. So here's Virad's report.
Just the other day, we realized we have a new member in the KHOI family. A sparrow has taken up residence on top of a speaker just outside the main door of the studio. It is not a surprise that sparrows live wherever humans thrive. You are not likely to find one in forests or other natural habitats. Sparrows are classified as an invasive species as they are not native to North America. As a Smithsonian article puts it, sparrows have been native to humanity rather than a particular region. They have followed us since originating in Africa. They were first introduced into the United States in the mid-19th century in New York. Eventually, sparrows grew to occupy most of the places in the country. Today, the species has occupied all parts of North America except for Alaska and the extreme north. Over the years, they have been introduced to different parts of the world. How has the sparrow been able to survive and grow? Thanks to its sturdy and adaptable nature, it can adjust to a variety of habitats and climate conditions. Sparrows have grown rapidly and have occupied new territories. The species is now found almost throughout the world. There are 25 different species of sparrows, including lark, savannah, American tree, grasshopper, and the white-crowned sparrow. The most common sparrow is the one we see most often, the house sparrow. It is also known as the English sparrow. Here are some interesting facts about sparrows compiled by the Cornell Lab of Ornithology that you might not be aware of. House sparrows like to have what's known as a dust bath as a social activity. The bath involves covering their feathers in dust and soil by digging into the ground. There is also a pecking order among sparrows. Males with larger black patches around their neck tend to be dominant and have a higher standing in their group. Sparrows are notorious for occupying man-made nests meant for native species. It is also interesting to note that historically, sparrows have been used as pets as well as for food. There have been efforts to restrict the growth of sparrows. preventative programs aim to scare away sparrows from making a nesting place on your roof or a corner of the house. Apparently, using a fake owl can do a good job to achieve this goal. Other crude methods to control sparrow population in the past have included destroying their eggs and nests. Globally, there has been some concern regarding the decreasing number of sparrows. However, given their prevalence, they're deemed to be of the least concern in terms of their conservation status. This is Varad Devte for KHOI Community Radio.
I'm Roger Berger, and I'm a host for two shows here at KHOI, the Thursday Morning Masterpieces and Sunday Afternoon Opera. And I was recalling my childhood in Hastings, Nebraska, where we had the usual array of birds. We had sparrows and crows and robins, orioles. Those are the ones I remember the best. Crows were the noisiest. The orioles were the prettiest. Sparrows, they had pretty low status. They were considered pretty insignificant birds when I was a child. Very plentiful, nondescript. And I was practicing on learning how to use my BB gun. And as I recall, I took aim at a sparrow that was just innocently sitting on a branch nearby and must have hit the poor little bird in the head because he fell over to the ground. He was dead. And if I'm correct in my memory, I started crying when I realized that killed a totally innocent creature that he had no gripe with me whatsoever, nor did I have any gripe with him either. It was just a random act of cruelty. And as you might guess, I did not grow up to be a big game hunter or a pheasant hunter. I did have an older brother that loved to hunt pheasants, but it didn't really take with me. I think it might have been because of that childhood experience with the sparrow. Well, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and thank you for joining us. We just heard a report from Varad Devarti with a commentary by Roger Berger, the music maestro. And Varad is the newest member of the KHOI Local Talk team, and I'm Ursula Rudenberg, one of your hosts today, together with Kay Patak.
Main Street Cultural District's Art Walk is happening in downtown Ames this Friday, June the 5th, from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. Inside or in front of selected businesses, there will be more than 40 artists who will be displaying, demonstrating, and selling their work. There will be activities for both children and adults, such as a sidewalk chalk contest, a sip and paint event at the local wine bar, and an R&B concert. The Main Street Cultural District will be holding a reception at the headquarters for the sculptures that were installed in April along Main Street. These are part of the annual Neighborhood Sculptural Program of public artworks that are selected by the Ames Public Art Commission.
And there's more that night. The Iowa State University Design on Main Gallery will be having their opening reception for a new exhibition that features artwork by youth involved in the global arts therapy. This Des Moines-based nonprofit organization provides arts education and sustainable development opportunities for disadvantaged or homeless youth and women, and art classes in both Nepal and the United States. Displays in this exhibit will also include photographs of the aftermath of the April 25th earthquake in Nepal, as well as images from rural Ghana, where Global Arts Therapy recently formed a partnership. Meanwhile, the Octagon will be having its opening reception for an exhibition of works by Roy Kasek. Kasek, I think, is correct. Kasek is a nationally recognized artist whose style, called Painted Pixels, is inspired by both Italian mosaics and modern technology.
Last but certainly not least, come by KHOI during Art Walk, where you can watch the KHOI Doodle Squad perform their first doodle work to music. KHOI is at 410 Douglas Avenue, opposite the Octagon. Michael Martin will be performing live, inspiring the six artist doodle team to create a doodle mural during Art Walk. Also, if you like to doodle, there will be supplies and opportunities for you, too, to doodle. We have some of the KHOI Doodle Squad artists here, including my co-host, Ursula Rudenberg. Ursula, tell us what the Doodle Squad does.
We will doodle a 17 by 4 foot mural in the KHOI Community Storefront space to music. We've never done it before, but we've discussed it, and we feel we are ready. Our motto is, it's a free country, you can doodle whatever you want to doodle. We have a schedule, choreography, a musician who is playing for us live right now in the studio, and elements, artistic elements like God, cherubs, talking heads.
How do you know what God looks like?
We'll work on it.
A heart, a microphone, a hand, and much more. And it goes without saying that we will doodle. We will have refreshments for you when you stop by, and supplies if you wish to doodle alongside us. And there will be a display of completed doodle coffee cups, and if you have trouble visualizing that, all of that, you'll have to just come by. KHOI is on Douglas Avenue, 410 Douglas, in the old Ames Pantorium building. So you are invited. I'd like to introduce some of the other artists on the squad. We have Jane Graham from Nevada. We have Lana Nachtigall from Onion Creek Farm.
Hello.
And from KHOI.
That too.
Lana Donna Kitchen. And we have Carolyn Salen, and who is in Boone right now. She's not with us. Alexis Dwyer will also be with us. She's not with us today. But Michael Martin is here. He is our muse.
Hello.
Okay. Lana, would you tell us a little bit what qualifies you to be on this squad, what your credentials are?
Oh, I am very, very comfortable with an instrument of pencil in my hand, so I can do that. I've done, I've worked in television, I've worked in theater, I draw a lot of pictures. I love to do things that have stories with them, so you'll see some interesting faces and little lumpy people from me. I've done a few murals before. Working big is kind of a challenge for me. That's why I'm glad I'm part of a team. I'm glad to be part of this doodle team.
Well, since you've worked in television, we accepted you into the mural squad.
Thank you.
You have an artistic statement?
Oh, I have an artistic statement. Now, art can be very, very complicated. That's why it takes human beings to do it. Here we are. We are talking we're using sound to form words, to go into your ears. And we are going to use our collective minds to create something for our collective eyes.
Excellent.
Very, very, very complicated. And we're just going to have a wee of a time doing it. And doing it to Michael Martin's music is going to be lovely.
Excellent. Thank you. Jane, this is Jane Graham from Nevada.
Hello,
Jane,
everyone.
Could you give us your credentials as a member of the mural, the Doodle Squad?
I showed up.
Oh, ultimate credential.
With great joy.
Okay, thank you for showing up. Do you have an artistic statement?
Just that I'm very pleased to be able to contribute to this effort, and it's a very impromptu event, and I have been amazed about the total, complete, spontaneous creativity that is going to be this mural, and that the basis and the basic structure of designing this mural is very
profound.
It's a complete, you know, everyone is collaborating together, getting their great ideas together, and it's very reminiscent of what you and I had done years ago.
This is true, yeah.
And it's kind of revitalizing that tradition.
Oh,
and
I like that. Jane, is it correct? Am I correct in understanding that you're responsible for the God part of this?
Yeah, as we were, you know, throwing out ideas and trying to get some structure to it.
You brought up God.
I just, the image of the creation of Adam and the hands coming together, which is the Sistine Chapel that has to be
D-T.
the has to be the image that everyone knows. And God communicated, God touched the human. And in essence, the KHOI is a creative entity that touches people.
So it's not like it's going to be a simple thing here. This sounds pretty darn ambitious,
and
it's going
to certainly does.
So come. Besides that, you'll probably see us all covered in paint. So somewhere in there, there's going to be a beautiful bit of artwork.
Michael, you are our muse. Do you have words or only music?
Mostly what I am is a songwriter, so I do have words, but I'm actually willing to play whatever is most appropriate for the occasion. So, you know, could do instrumental noodling, kind of like I was just doing, or songs.
Doodling to noodling.
There you go.
There it is. That's Michael, what are your credentials to be part of this?
I don't really have any at all. I guess my day job is a professor at ISU in landscape architecture.
Well, that'll do.
And I travel a lot. I spent the spring in Rome. I go on the fall. I did a show one time here, actually, about a year ago, about the Savannah Studio in the fall, where we travel a lot. So I guess a lot of my music comes from travels and stories and, you know, songs about things and places. So whether it's songs with lyrics or songs with just instrumental parts, you know, they're all based in something, something I've done. So who knows what connection will be made between the music and the art, but I'm really looking forward to it.
Thank you. Do you have an artistic statement?
That's an interesting question. I don't know if I've ever been asked that. I think that my discovery about songwriting is that you have to have something important to write about, or else a song won't come out. And so anything that I ever come up with is something coming from something important. I guess that's all I can say about that.
Thank you. So something important will happen on Friday at 5 p.m. to 8 p.m., and we will be doodling to noodling.
That's
excellent.
Okay. You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and we've been hearing from the KHOI Doodle Squad, who will be performing their first 14-foot mural, doodle mural, to the music of Michael Martin. At KHOI this Friday during Art Walk. Art Walk is organized by the Main Street Cultural District. Other events during Art Walk will include artists in or in front of many downtown businesses, as well as art openings at the Octagon Arts Center, Main Street Cultural District, and Design on Main. They're all in downtown Ames. We'll be posting contact information for all of these later today on our website, khoifm.org. Thank you for joining us. Oh, Ursula, you haven't given your statement.
Well, my credential is that I'm the station manager here, so I'm doing it because I can.
Oh. Anyway, thank you.
And I gave you my artistic statement. It's a free country, and we can doodle what we want to doodle.
Okay. There's certainly no lack of, chutzpah in this group, I can say that.
We prefer to call it creativity.
Okay. Thank you for joining us, Ursula, Jane, Lorna, and Michael from the KHOI Doodle Squad.
To receive us. sight. I move forward with my senses open. Imperfection can be my crime. In humility I will listen. We're all swimming to the other side. We are living in the great big deal, for we are washed by the very same rain. We are swimming in the stream together, some in power and some in pain. We can worship this ground we walk on, cherishing the beings that we live beside. Loving spirits will live forever. We're all swimming to the other side. On this journey through thoughts and feelings, finding intuition, my head, my heart, I am gathering the tools together. I'm preparing to do my part. All of those who come before me, band together and be my guide. Loving lessons that I will follow. We're all swimming to the other side. We are living beneath the great big dipper. We are washed by the very same rain. We are swimming in the stream together, some in power and some in vain. We can worship this ground we walk on, cherishing the beings that we live beside. Loving spirits will live forever. We're all swimming to the other side.
Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts today, Ursula Rudenberg, together with Kay Puttock. And recently, there was a new initiative that began coming together called the Ames Progressive Alliance. And they held their first public event yesterday in Brookside Park, a picnic with music and lots of food. And about 300 people came to talk and enjoy the beautiful summer weather. But there was a larger agenda at hand, and I asked two of the organizers of the Ames Progressive Alliance to come by and tell us about that. Welcome, Victoria Shapinski.
Thank you.
And Ann Kinzel.
Good morning.
Good morning. So tell us, how did this start, the Ames Progressive Alliance?
Shall I begin? Okay, well, first I'll do my disclaimer. I'm not sure if it's being in the park all afternoon with the pollen or talking too much. Probably talking too much. But anyway, we began in January with a small group of people meeting, thinking about how we could be involved in making our community more progressive. We knew that there were things that people wanted to do, but we didn't have a vehicle for bringing people together on a regular basis to talk about issues, to find out how to make sure that our voices were being heard by local government, and also to get people or encourage people to be involved in local government, be it boards and commissions, city council, school board, board of supervisors. From my own experience, I can tell you, you really can make a difference. And when you have more people of similar concerns and thinking, and let's call it being progressive, you actually can make things change. And I will argue that you can have a much bigger influence, and that local government plays a larger role in our daily lives than what happens at the state level and the federal level. And we can be involved in getting all those things that we want to see done. And so this was the beginning. It's like, let's start figuring out how to have events and encourage people to come together. This was not the be-all, end-all, and we certainly haven't figured it all out. We're new. So part of this was, help us figure out what we do next, how we go forward, how we keep everyone engaged and involved.
You said you were referring to we several times. Can you tell us a little bit exactly who we is?
Well, we was the small group was a steering committee.
And who were these people?
Well, Ann and myself, Bronwyn Beattie Hansen, Carrie Katz, Roxanne Doss, Lisa Lay, Dave Carter, John Kloss, and Matthew Goodman, and Dan DeGeest.
And how did this conversation start?
Like many, you know. It's like, we need to do something. Well, let's just do it. Let's figure out how to do this.
Uh-huh.
And we probably talked about it for a long time, but we're actually, I think we've got a good organization. And that's the group that was willing to get started on it, but we're wanting new people.
And this began in January. So.
In January, yes. Yeah. Just this smaller group started talking, but we were the steering committee, and mm-hmm. we've grown, and we have a lot of younger people too, which for me is who I'm not a younger person anymore, I'll admit it. It's been really encouraging that there's a large group of younger folks in our community who are engaged and smart and are very excited about the prospects of us, you know, looking how we can make some differences.
Ann Kinzel, why did you get involved with this?
Well, first of all, the group of people that Victoria mentioned are fun and interesting to work with, so that was a great draw. Second, I think that a lot of people talk about our democracy in the United States being a little bit broken or a little bit tired and not functioning as many of us would like. And it's my personal view, that if we want to rebuild democracy to something that's more pleasing to us, that we have to start at the local level. As Victoria said, this is a level of government that affects people on a daily basis. This is what can bring people back, I think, into a sense that their concerns matter, that someone hears them, that people actually represent them and have a responsibility to do so. That if you don't like big money in politics, the only thing that can change it is a big voice, and it starts at the local level.
So this is really about citizen participation.
I think that's one of the things that we're about. It's about citizen participation, but it's also about citizen responsibility, in the sense that citizens, I think, have a responsibility to participate in their government. But it's easy to diminish that responsibility by sort of making the opportunity to be heard less. And money in politics can certainly obscure that. And at the local level, this is a place where people can start to exercise, if you will, their duties and responsibilities as citizens.
Well, it's interesting. You had a large turnout yesterday, 300 people approximately.
Well, I think more than 300.
More than 300.
We know that we were at 315 and then we ran out of name tags.
Oh, well,
so
that's
we had,
good.
We know, yeah. We, yeah.
So, mm-hmm. So you must have hit a chord somewhere with this because people, either that or people just were in the mood for a picnic because it was first day of summer. But
we put a good effort into inviting people. Mm-hmm. We had created the Facebook page and we encouraged everybody to bring people, their friends, to look at the Facebook page, and we knew that those numbers were growing of how many people mm-hmm. were looking at it. We did some mailings. We did an evening where we got together at Torrent Brewery, and once again, he was very nice to allow us to use his space, and we did a calling night. So several people came up to me yesterday and said, oh, I got a call. So that did also was mm-hmm. that last, you know, kick that encouraged people to come and be there yesterday. Mm-hmm. Plus, you know, you really couldn't beat that weather.
Yeah.
I'd like to say it was all us, but I think that had a little to do with it, too. It was perfect.
Day, yeah.
Yeah.
So what I'm hearing is, and this is a new idea for me, too, what I'm hearing is that you feel that the moment is right for more active involvement.
I'm seeing it and I'm hearing it, and I think it's happening nationally. I think the turnout that Bernie Sanders has been seeing is saying something. Mm-hmm. They're exceeding all of the numbers that they've expected. You know, maybe people are finally realizing that they're not voting in their best interest and that if they want to see change, they're going to need to get involved and move the country in a different direction.
So give us your impressions from the picnic. What happened yesterday?
I was very, very pleased, as I mentioned, that I wasn't in the 10% youngest people who were there, because that's not a good thing. There were a lot of young family, and I think for a gathering in Ames, it was very age diverse. So I thought that was great. I was also very pleased at the turnout itself. It was certainly beat my expectations. And as Victoria said, the weather helped. I was amazed at how much people seemed to want to engage in conversation with each other. People didn't just clump up, it seemed like, with their usual habitués. Rather, we saw them in the food line, which some people said was a little bit long. It gave people the opportunity to talk and meet others, and it seemed like they really availed themselves of that.
Well, we did an interesting experiment also in that we had a big board with all the different – a number of issues. And we asked when you signed in to take these four dots and put next to the ones that you thought were the most important. And that really engaged people. It engaged conversations. I stood by there every once in a while and, you know, trying to decide which of the four were the most important. But I haven't studied the board yet, but I think it's going to be interesting to see how that sort of played out. And then we had another place to sort of write things down that you weren't – that wasn't on that list that mm-hmm. we had created, but add
yeah.
to it.
I think, if I remember correctly, I looked at the board. A walkable business district was very high.
Oh, good.
And affordable housing was very, very
yeah.
high. That's what I noticed, had the most dots when I looked at it.
Yeah, affordable and accessible housing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what's next for you guys?
I was just going to say. So the next thing that we were thinking about was to host forums in the fall for both the school board election, which is September 8th, so we probably would do that late summer, and then for the city council elections, and what's that, November 3rd. So mm-hmm. probably sometime in October we'll host forums.
And what kind of a venue will you have for that?
Well, we've been looking at the library,
mm-hmm.
and I think we also discussed using council chambers,
mm-hmm.
but I think the group was leaning more towards wanting to use the library.
And why have you chosen those specific activities?
Well, I think that one of the things that we want to do is increase participation in local elections. As we know, the turnout is very low. The margin between candidates is very slim. And this is an opportunity to add another voice to the mix. I think that also it's important for us to look at ways of supporting candidates in the future, encouraging people to run. And this is part of what we have to do. But I also think that we're going to be about more than elections and forums. But we need to hear from people and communicate with people who are at the event and see what's their interest.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
They've told us about some of the issues they're interested in by the board that of issues that Victoria referenced. But we also need to hear from them about how they want us to proceed. We don't, as Victoria said earlier, we don't have all the answers here. This is new territory for us. And it's good to be able to communicate with people. It's good to make use of the new social media. But is that the end all? Are there other ways? What do we need to do? What do people of progressive values want to do in Ames? What does that mean for them? And how can we make our community a more livable, pleasant community for all who live here, no matter what their values are?
Could yeah. either of you give us a definition, actually, of what progressive means?
That's a good one. I think it's the opposite of what's not progressive, in that it's not doing what is the status quo. It's thinking beyond, looking at what has been successful in other parts of not just the country but of the world. It's being bold. It's trying new things. It's encouraging other people to try something new.
Thank you. So this is not a partisan concept. This is a vision concept.
I would say that, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And we have said that we are a nonpartisan group.
Mm-hmm. But. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Do you have a Facebook page? You have a website? How can one give you feedback?
We have a Facebook page, and it's Ames Progressive Alliance. We have a mission statement that the group came up with, and it's, if I have a second, I'll read it. It's our mission is to lead Ames toward a shared, vibrant, and prosperous future by leveraging community resources for progressive priorities. And please join us.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank
you. We are living in the great big dipper. We are washed by the very same rain. We are swimming in the stream together, some in power and some in pain. We can worship this ground. loving spirits will live forever. We're all swimming to the other side. Loving spirits will live forever. We're all swimming to the other side.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, one of your hosts for today, together with Kay Potok, and that was Swimming to the Other Side from the CD Root Rock and Revolution by Emma's Revolution.
Well, summer is here, and summer, like every season in Iowa, has its own forms of volatility. We appreciate the work done by the Story County Emergency Management. Keith Morgan, who is the Emergency Management Coordinator for Story County, is here with us. Thank you for joining us, Keith.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here.
Starting this month, Keith will be providing monthly emergency management segments on each first Monday during Local Talk, and we really appreciate that, Keith. Tell us just briefly, for starters, what you do, Keith, for those who may not know that we have an Emergency Management Coordinator.
Well, first off, I work for a commission made up of all of the mayors across the county, one representative from the Board of Supervisors and the sheriff. And that helps me be able to work for all of the communities and those that are in unincorporated areas. And our job is to bring together the different folks across the county, the different services that are there, and try and make it so that we're the most efficient possible on sharing resources during an emergency. Most of the time, it's the, as we say, disasters start locally and end locally. And it is up to the communities to be able to take care of themselves. But it's just not efficient for them to have enough to do everything across the full spectrum. So we work to coordinate and share resources.
There's a lot to do, and coordination is a requirement at times like that.
Sure. The better we are prepared beforehand, both as individuals, as communities, and as business, the better we'll be able to react to a disaster, no matter what it is.
Mm-hmm. You were planning to speak with us today about hazard mitigation planning. Can you tell us what hazard mitigation planning is?
Sure. It's the start of our emergency management cycle. What we do by doing hazard mitigation planning is we look at what's out there for risk, and we try and reduce our exposure to those risks. It's a requirement from FEMA if we want to be eligible for hazard mitigation grants, but it's also a good idea for us to do as a community, and it's a good idea for individuals and businesses to also do for themselves.
And how exactly was this developed?
First off, we have a hazard mitigation plan that covers this entire county, and that was first done in 2009. As recently as 2012, we did a complete revision of that, and that's a requirement from FEMA. And we brought together people from across the community for the Hazard Mitigation Planning Committee. And what we did is we started first off by looking at what are our risks that we have out there. And we went through those risks. And as a community, it should be no surprise to everybody that we came up with river flooding as our top risk of winter storms and tornadoes. And when we looked at them, we looked at what is the likelihood of us having one of those disasters.
River flooding is higher than tornadoes in terms of risk.
It is, because when you look at the magnitude and the probability of flooding, how often have we had the flooding here? We know that it's likely to happen. Plus the magnitude, it strikes multiple communities along the way. So as an aggregate, our exposure to risk from flooding is greater than a tornado, although a tornado can be more devastating for one community.
But it's very specific when it hits.
Very specific, yes.
Yeah.
After that, we looked at our goals, and the goals that we came up with as a planning committee are pretty much the same that we have in emergency management. Protect lives, reduce injury is our number one goal. And then after that, we looked at how can we minimize or reduce damage to property, to include our critical facilities is where we kind of start from. And then what is very important in today's environment is how can we optimize our public funds to be able to reduce our exposure to these kinds of risks. And then our fourth and fifth goal were to reduce outages, because those can have a major impact across a wide area, and strengthen communications, because communications is sounds like something simple, but it's very difficult to do.
Wow, so these are all very dense goals. Every single one of them has just a huge amount of work and context.
It is. And from those goals that were pretty much from across the county, we ask the jurisdictions to go back and to look at their communities and decide how they can best apply these goals within mm-hmm. their communities and to develop strategies. And they have done that. Each community, again, because the disasters start locally and they end locally, and each community has different exposure to different risk, has to come up with their different strategies. And as they're doing that, we ask them to use a tool called the Stapley, which is after they develop all of these different strategies, they look through them and say which ones are going to be socially acceptable, which ones are technically feasible. There's a whole list of them in there. And we ask for public input on those.
I'm looking here at a chart that you gave me. Each community actually has different priorities.
Exactly.
It's interesting the term socially acceptable jumps out. What does that mean, actually?
There are some things that may require, you know, as a society, they may not want it. They may find the idea of greater regulation on building codes to not be acceptable within that community, that the community itself feels that that should be an individual decision, or that to minimize a risk along a river will require them to put up a large concrete wall, which they may feel isn't socially acceptable because it doesn't give the right kind of feel and look to a community. And that's where public input into our hazard mitigation plan is very, very important.
What is a totally acceptable change that almost any community will just adopt immediately?
A lot of it is education out there to try. Again, we go back to it's the individuals and the businesses that can be a huge part of this. If they just plan and prepare for themselves, then the amount that the overall infrastructure has to take care of is significantly reduced by that. Mm-hmm. Those are the easy ones. Although it looks easy, actually finding a way to get out to the public and investing the time and effort
right.
for it can be difficult.
Who does the education?
I'm here right now as a part of that. But we also have to rely on the communities themselves. Mm-hmm. Again, mm-hmm. I keep going back to the communities. Having a strong emergency operations plan within a community is the best way that they can take this, apply it in a smaller area, and make it so that it can have direct impact in their community if they're prepared to use their resources to the best of their abilities.
Mm-hmm. You see that spot on the TV sometimes. You know, people that chase tornadoes or watch tornadoes, they say this makes it more real to people and it makes them take shelter more. Do you think that's true?
It's a double-edged sword. You know, I often joke about when the outdoor warning sirens or when you get a warning that there's a tornado out there, it doesn't mean grab your video camera and go outside and look for it. Those folks that are out there doing storm spotters have had a lot of training on that. Mm-hmm. And even with that, 2 years ago, I think it was, we had a storm spotter team. A couple of their team members got killed
yeah,
doing
sure.
it.
Yeah, sure.
And these folks have had a lot of meteorological to be able to determine where to best position themselves.
Right. But do you think hearing what these people say makes people take shelter more?
It can when you can specifically say a tornado has been spotted at mm-hmm. this point. Then it becomes more real for those that are out there. But our message is it's always better to err on the side of safety.
Sure.
If the sirens are going off or if you're seeing it on your TV, just go down into your basement and take a little bit of time to relax down there as opposed to being upstairs.
And feel the air pressure change.
Yes, hopefully not too much.
You have a list of various hazards in order of severity or a probability, I guess, as well. I wonder if you could read some of them just to give our listener a sense of what you are anticipating could happen.
Sure. I mean, we look at all the way, the top three that we've already mentioned, river flooding, winter storm, tornadoes. One thing that folks may not consider is hazardous materials with major transportation routes mm-hmm. moving through this county. It is something that we look at all the time. Windstorms, transportation incidences are along there. Flash flooding, which is a little bit different than river flooding. Hailstorms are another one. Eldora in the recent past was severely impacted by a hailstorm that came along. Thunder and lightning, drought. It seems like a long, long time ago, but just a couple of years ago, we were very concerned about a lack of water out there. Skipping on down, infrastructure failure. If we had a key component of our infrastructure, electrical, cyber, something like that, mm-hmm. if there was a major disruption
yeah.
on those.
Last summer, downtown Ames, including KHOI, went dark because a raccoon got into the electrical system.
Exactly. So we ask everybody to look at those sorts of things individually and as a city, and when does it become a serious impact on that city? Animal, crop, and plant disease. We're in that right now with avian influenza, extreme heat. Fortunately, at the very bottom, we have sinkholes and expansive soils. That's where significant cracking occurs and earthquakes. So we looked at everything.
Do you have earthquakes in Iowa?
We don't have earthquakes in Iowa in this area. There is a fault, New Madrid Fault, that is centered more down by Missouri and that area, Kentucky area. But what it is, it's not so much do we have them, but we have looked at them and we've studied them, and we hired a consultant to be a part of this overall studying, and they went and did all of the research to make sure that what we perceived was reality.
Mm-hmm. When I was young, I was very worried about volcanic eruptions. So I see you don't have them on the list here.
That's the one thing that didn't make it make the cut.
Well, that's very reassuring.
But they do. There are sinkholes in northeast Iowa. In fact, sometimes a whole house can go down a sinkhole.
Explain what a sinkhole is.
A sinkhole is where the structure underneath the surface gets eroded away, and then limestone with water flowing through it will actually collapse underneath there. And in this area, in this county, because this was focused on Story County, we haven't experienced any of that recently in enough significance to make the cut.
It's a big problem because not only suddenly this hole appears in the ground, but then water pours into that hole and it pollutes the groundwater.
And again, we're fortunate we don't have those, but we do have a significant amount of work to do just on our top five, top ten on here. Mm-hmm. And the public's welcome to go look at this entire list. This is an extract of the whole plan that's available on our website, www.storycountyiowa.gov/EMA. And the overall plan itself is approximately 400 plus pages because, again, each community.
Nice light reading.
Yes, a little bit of light reading.
We're speaking with Keith Morgan from Story County Emergency Management, and he's telling us about the hazard mitigation planning, which is in a sense, a program that has been coming together for the last 10 years or so?
It has been evolving over the past 10 years. And because we've had this plan, because of the investment in the time and effort by the community and by the jurisdictions, we've been able to get about $4 million worth of hazard mitigation grant. Some of them have included in the cities of or the school districts of Nevada, Huxley, and Gilbert. They now have safe rooms that are designed to withstand top-level tornadoes to protect the students. We were able to get generators for some of our communities, such as Story City, Collins, Colo, and Gilbert, so that should the power go down, they'll still have the capability to provide command and control. And we've also been able to do some buyouts. So if houses were in a flood-prone area, we've now been able to help out the resident by buying out a house that others aren't going to want to buy. We've gotten them out of that, and they can't build back into that area afterwards. So, again, try and remove the risk as much as possible. And if you can't eliminate that risk, tornadoes and like that, you try and make it so that you reduce the risk to people and properties as much as possible.
Hmm. So this is the hazard mitigation planning, which could also be described as being well prepared, right? Doing the work in advance and setting priorities and figuring out how to reduce risk before it happens, right?
Exactly. And this is the same process that, again, the public and the businesses can also do. You know, right now, as you said, we're coming into the severe weather season. Look around your house. Do you have any branches that are hanging over your house that will create risk to your house? Have you possibly looked at your insurance so that you can shift the risk that you're incurring over to the insurance company by making sure you have adequate insurance, and have you inventoried your stuff so that if you have to afterwards that you can actually utilize that insurance? Have you got a plan that if the family's all scattered across different areas that you can communicate to each other and let each other know that you're okay where you're at and then have a plan on how you're going to get back together again? And if we do have severe weather or something like that, especially young kids, let them know how to be aware that the weather is out there, when it's important to go and seek shelter, how to get information while they are sheltered so that they can know afterwards what to do. So it's the same process that we ask everybody to do.
And you're doing it, too, as an agency.
We're doing it as an agency all the time. We have been working with one of our businesses, the first responders in a community, to plan for how they would respond to an event at that business. And then we exercised it to make sure that the plan actually works.
Mm-hmm. On a scale of 1 to 10, as a county, how well do you see us being prepared in the way that this plan envisions?
I would say that we're about mid-level at a 5 comparatively.
It's a never-ending process, really, right?
It's a never-ending process. People are a major part of this. So as people come, we need to always be conducting more training, and then we always need to be doing more exercises. And we also, each of the communities has to be looking at their emergency plan as communities grow or as the environment changes. Just as we're looking at our hazard mitigation plan, every community needs to be looking at how they're going to be prepared if a disaster strikes, to be able to get together, figure out what's happened, and then to make sure and get their resources applied to that. And also to see where their gaps are and to work with the citizens to decide which gaps they want to fill and which ones they can afford to fill up front. It's going to be different for every community.
Mm-hmm. Is there a checklist that individuals can find?
We have on our website, we have, for instance, a handout that has what to do to be prepared for the first 72 hours after a disaster. Water is one of the key ones. Mm-hmm. Have 3 days supply of water, 1 gallon per person per day. So a family of four or so, you'd have 1 gallon per person. That'd be 4 gallons for 3 days, 12 gallons of water. Food. Knowing where the water shutoff is for your house, and if you have natural gas, the natural gas shutoff is, and do you have a wrench to be able to turn off the gas if your house has been impacted? Things like that. We've got a complete list for not just the family, but also pets. And then
awesome.
We also have other brochures for if you have special needs. We've got a lot of information out there for people, and they can always just give us a call.
And the website again?
It's www.storycountyiowa.gov/EMA, or they can just call us at 382-7315.
Thank you, Keith. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and we've been speaking with Keith Morgan, who is the Emergency Management Coordinator for Story County. Keith has been explaining hazard mitigation planning. And Keith, you'll be coming back to Local Talk on the first Monday of each month and be providing monthly emergency management segments. Thank you for doing this. We're real excited to work with you on this.
Yes, thank you. I look forward to being here once a month.
It's great to be coordinated with Story County Emergency Management.
Today we also spoke with Victoria Shapinski and Anne Kinzel from the Ames Progressive Alliance, Lorna Nactical, Jane Graham, and Michael Martin of the KHOI Doodle Squad. At the top of the hour, Varad Duarte provided our environmental segment on sparrows. I've been one of your hosts today, Kay Potter, together with
Ursula Rudenberg, and our engineer was Richard Morrison. Remember that Art Walk will be June 5th from 5 to 8 p.m. in downtown Ames. And please come by KHOI to say hello and see the KHOI Doodle Squad doodling to noodling. And that is interpreting the live music of Michael Martin on a 17-foot mural. There'll also be a Doodle Cup exhibit, and in case you feel the urge to doodle, we'll provide the equipment for that as well as refreshments. And, of course, if you have not had a tour of KHOI, we'll show you around. KHOI is located at 410 Douglas Avenue. Come and see us.
Music you heard today was Swimming to the Other Side from the CD Root Rock and Revolution by Emma's Revolution. And our theme song, which you're hearing now, is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD The Ballad of Kate Shelley. You can also listen to this show and all our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. And see listings of our past guests and resource contact information. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. And if you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878, 292-2878, or through our website, khoifm.org. Your participation as audience is what makes KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.